It's a Bopmatic podcast for June 3rd. I'm pretty sure that is the correct date. 2015.
1979.
On this episode, I can't do it. Can you use your superhero song?
That's good.
That's close. All right. I'll take it.
Pow. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me in the booth today is...
Amanda.
Jeremy.
Bill.
The theme for Summer Challenge this year is superheroes. So today, we're going to get bit by a spider and save the day. Super frackin' heroes! There's going to be a ton of programs all over the library. We'll put a link in there you can click to see what interests you and what's happening at your branch. But I'm going to be greedy, or maybe selfish is the better word. Wait, are those synonyms?
They're...
I don't know, sure. You dingus. I'm a good host. I'd be mad at you guys if you were this self-deprecating. But I am going to be selfish and pitch my own program. That is the Superheroes Wikipedia Edit-a-thon on Saturday, June 13th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. here at the main library. What's a Wikipedia Edit-a-thon? It's when everybody gets together, hangs out, and edits Wikipedia articles about one thing. In this case, superheroes. I assume that both Jeremy and Mike will be there. So you can create and edit Wikipedia articles about your favorite superheroes from comics, movies, video games, or better yet, real life. I will probably be editing articles about real life heroes. Beginner and experienced Wikipedia editors are welcome. I'm a novice Wikipedia editor, but there will be a very experienced Wikipedia editor there to help you. There'll be a sort of a short tutorial on how to do it right, what mistakes not to make. Then at the end, we can all share what we did. It is bring your own device, so bring your own computer to type on, and it'll be a ton of fun. And it's all afternoon, so you can just hang out, you can come and go, it's all good. Wikipedia Superheroes Edit-a-thon. Be there or be a supervillain who gets his face kicked in. And remember to turn your cell phone down. Since the rest of us are going to be talking about the distinguished competition today, Jeremy can kick things off by talking about a Marvel creative property.
I am a longtime cardholder in the Merry Marvel Marching Society. That's not true.
Say that 10 times.
Merry Marvel Marching Society. Merry Marvel Marching Society.
So I'm going to take this opportunity today to talk about Black Widow, who is actually not technically a superhero in the sense that she doesn't have superpowers, but she's a super cool character, so it counts. She's Natasha Romanoff, and she was trained as a spy and killed a lot of people. And in Nathan Edmondson and Phil Noto's Black Widow, The Finely Woven Thread and The Tightly Tangled Web, she tries to atone for her sins by taking on jobs that will help right all the wrongs that she has committed in her life. So like her namesake, she is deadly, and that makes her an asset to any team that she serves on or any agency that she's working for. And it also makes her a horrible threat to fight against. And she first appeared in 1964 and has been a villain, a romantic interest and partner for Daredevil. And she's also now the star of summer blockbusters and has appeared here and there in her own series, has primarily been maybe a backup character and has really kind of come to the forefront with the Avengers movies. Now, Edmondson and Noto in their books, they really have a cool style down. This like really fast-paced, and it's a very quick read, and really lots of really cool, striking images of like her crazy red hair sort of flowing and like she's holding a gun. But there's not any you might need to get a new music cued for this. I'm gonna play the sex pot card, because they never really go.
Just made up your own card.
Just made it up. Just like, boom, chicka, boom, brown chicken, brown cow. They never really go that route in the book. They don't, like, play up the sexuality of the character. It's mostly, like, her just sort of being a badass, which is pretty great. There are some variant covers that were included in the back, some pinups that veer into pinup territory in the back of the book, but you can just skip those if you're so inclined. These stories sort of have a cold and detached tone, which is sort of the mood you might expect from a story about a person who was raised from childhood to be an assassin. If you're looking for a sort of different take on the character, Cullen Bunn and Francesco Francavilla take a more pulpy approach by pairing her with Captain America and having her fight interdimensional invaders in a collection that we own called Captain America and the Black Widow. And we'll put links in the stuff I will send them to Brian. I wanted to talk about Black Widow because the Avengers movie, Age of Ultron, just came out as a big, huge hit. And there's been a lot of talk in fan communities and online and stuff about that character not getting her own movie, and people really want to see it. Someone made a title sequence for it. And there were some leaked emails from Ike Perlmutter, who is the CEO of Marvel Entertainment, and he mentioned that they had no plans on making a Black Widow movie because of the failure of so many other female-driven superhero movies. But the thing with that is that those were all garbage movies and not actually even remotely good. And they weren't bad because of the ladies. They were bad because they were garbage. And I'm thinking of, like, Catwoman, Supergirl, Elektra, stuff like that. But there's been so much male garbage superhero movies, too, like Daredevil, the Ben Affleck Daredevil Green Lantern, Meteor Man, Sylvester Stallone's Judge Dredd, Superman 4, and Steel, starring Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah. That's why you started it. So, obviously, there's not a lot.
I was like, to point out Ant-Man is coming out.
Oh, yeah.
You lost me at the title.
Hey, no one is more shocked than me that Ant-Man is coming out. So obviously there's not much parody in here, but also, like, they're pulling Black Widow's image from play sets for toys from the Avengers movies, because apparently boys don't like to buy toys with girls on them. But
in a minute.
Yeah, well, hey, that's what I'm saying. So I want to put my vote out there for the powers that be to make a Black Widow movie, because she's one of the coolest characters in those movies. Scarlett Johansson does a great job, and she already starred in the greatest comic book movie ever made, which was Ghost World, and that was in 2001. And so do that, please, because I know who these superhero movies are made for. If we're being crass, they're made for dudes like me who are approaching middle age, who are just big kids with mortgages. That's the dollar that they're after. But we like robots and men in capes and explosions. We also like attractive women in skin-tight leather jumpsuits. And so, like, there's $1 billion. Here you go. Next year, I will be out of the highly coveted 18 to 35-year-old demographic. So it's not, no surprise that I'm starting to get a little annoyed by this stuff. But I also have a young son, and I don't want him to think that girls are stupid or gross or can't beat him up. So I'm going to introduce him to Black Widow as soon as my wife says it's okay for him to see people use guns.
Take him to go see Mad Max Fury Road on the down low.
Well, my wife is leaving town this weekend, so.
That was great, Dad.
Amanda, what do you have to talk about this week?
Well, I have never really been big into comic land, especially not boy comic land. So today I'm going to subtitle all of my segments with things my husband likes.
Little Pony.
Care Bears. My husband loves Superman, like, loves him. So when I saw the book I'm going to talk about, when I saw it come in, I knew I had to read it so I could catch up with, you know, the rest of the world. And it kind of seems like, you know, Jeremy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we're going through kind of an origin phase in comic. Like, everybody wants to know how Wolverine got his claws or why Hulk must smash.
That's always a big theme. They always like to do those stories.
So today I'm going to talk about a different kind of origin. And as much as we'd like to believe that superheroes have always been and must always be, you know, it turns out that somebody, or in our case a team of somebody's, had to initially have that propelling initial idea. So what if a strong man could leap tall buildings in a single bound? Or what if he was an alien from a destroyed planet? What kind of tights would he wear? These are questions that we must have answers for. So the book I'm going to talk about is called Super Boys by author Brad Ricca, and he takes us on a journey of the genesis of Superman. And by that I don't mean the genesis of his character, I mean by how he was created originally, by Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster. They grew up in Ohio at the beginning of the 20th century. And so I guess for Superman fans, Cleveland, Ohio really does rock. I've been there and I didn't see it, but anyway.
You have to imagine something when you're living in Cleveland.
Yeah, I see. So Superman, I think Jeremy said he was the first major. He was early 1930s. Yeah. Beat Batman out by half a decade. So this is depression-ridden Ohio. Times are tough. Work is scarce. Food is scarce. But all the boys really wanted to do was create comics. And Siegel is the writer. Schuster is the artist. And so they kind of put out their own pulp comic, which were very big at the time. It was kind of where science fiction had its genesis. And so then they finally, after they weren't successful with their own comic. They were kind of working on a couple things on the side. And then they had this idea for this Superman, because the strong men were going around amazing people with their feats of strength on the circuit. And so they kind of borrowed that a little bit, and it actually became big enough. And then, unfortunately, they sold all the rights in perpetuity to National Comics for $130. So, hindsight. So, basically, they were, after they sold the rights, they were work for hire for National Comics, which was a New York company. So they never saw royalties for the radio show, the TV show, any of the movies. Siegel realized his mistake. It was his idea, of course, because he was kind of the leader of the group. He was the used car salesman, if you will. Schuster just wanted to draw pictures. And so they tried to sue National. They kind of went in and out of court for years. They got fired, rehired, and then fired again. And it just, it got really ugly. It turned out they ended up finally in like the late 20th century, right as they were nearing the end of their lives, they finally got credit. So like when you saw if you watched the Lois and Clark TV show with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher, like at the end they finally got created by Siegel and Schuster.
I think the movie was the first time.
The one with Christopher Reeves?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were fighting over it at that point, and they kind of made some settlement, and then they went back and fought again.
Yeah, and there was, because like they finally got like a settlement with them, and then they got like a...
They got some royalty.
Yeah.
Like a payment.
It was like a yearly sort of salary, I guess. And then as they got older and became ill and stuff, I think they asked for more money, and they didn't want to... Even though, like, it's $1 billion
industry. Company,
yeah, it's just like a cash cow for them.
Yeah, it was totally a good move by the National Comics people for locking that down. So I would say that that story is probably not unique in the world of comics.
No,
I'm
not
sure
at all.
Because I know that Batman's creator, he sold his rights at some point, but he kept the byline.
But also, it's never fully come to light, I guess. But it's generally believed that he didn't really do that much there's a guy named Bill Finger. And we have a book that I can't think of the name of it. It's like a kid's book that's like about Bill Finger. It's called maybe The Boy Wonder or something like that.
The book in question is Bill the Boy Wonder, The Secret Co-Creator of Batman by Mark Tyler Nobleman.
Yeah, that's pretty much like the story with every major character. There's always like Marvel Comics, Stan Lee is generally credited with doing everything, but he really did half or less than half of everything. And even now with the new Daredevil show, someone that has sort of played a major part in that, his estate has written a letter sort of claiming that they're owed money for elements that are in the show. And I don't know, it's like a constant fight.
Well, and I think too, you look back at all the pulps that they stole from to start, who's to say what goes where, and I just think they had one of the issues that they tried to make was that Superman was this figure of American justice and honesty, and then they weren't getting paid, you know, I mean, that was
the total cutthroat.
The
business.
Most unjust.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing, too, was like, here's this thing that works and is popular, let's copy it every way that we can, and in fact, like, National, which became DC, they would sue anybody who had like someone who could fly and he didn't really even fly at the beginning, but anyone who was like super strong and stuff, who was like Superman, like Captain Marvel back in the day and stuff, which they own Captain Marvel now, but anyone who came along who was like that, they would just sue them for infringing on the copyright, even though like that's sort of what everyone did.
It's tragic
stories.
Yeah, I thought the book was pretty good. It was kind of, you know, sad to see the creators of Superman begging for handouts from the multi-million-dollar company that owned them. But that's okay, because I like Batman better.
that guy did all right.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm last.
They've been dead for like 20 years.
Adam West could kick George Reeves' butt. It's okay.
That's true.
All right, Mr. Bill.
Bill Finger created the Joker.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well. I want to talk about DC on the CW.
Yeah.
In other words, how CW has done a great job of bringing DC Comics to television. It first started with The Arrow, which deals with Oliver Queen, son of a billionaire who is a vigilante. The Arrow, whose goal is to clean up Star City of crime and corruption. We have the first two seasons on DVD. The Arrow has a wonderful sense of film noir. It's very dark. And The Arrow is based on the comic, The Green Arrow, which we have several graphic novels in our collection, so you should look those up and check them out. On the lighter side is The Flash, in which Barry Allen, who possesses super speed, in which he races through Central City fighting crime and metahumans who have superpowers. The Flash is a spinoff of The Arrow, and we first met Barry Allen in season 2 of The Arrow. We do not have The Flash yet on DVD.
The first season just ended
and really enjoyed it. But we have the graphic novels, The Flash Chronicles, so you can read them until the DVDs come out. Both shows are produced by Greg Bertolanti of Bertolanti Productions. Move your head, Fred. The team of the writers do an excellent job of doing crossover episodes. I was at WonderCon this year. Danielle Pennybaker and Candace Patton and Carlos Valdez and the writer Andrew Griceberg, I believe his name, they were talking about The Flash, and they're planning to do more of that with the crossover episodes. They seem to really enjoy the job they're doing. On top of that, next season is a new superhero show on the CW called Legends of Tomorrow, so that's something to look forward to. Also on the CW is iZombie. I've discussed this before on Tickling My Fancy with Amanda, and I'm still enjoying it. We have the iZombie graphic novels in our collection. Some of you are saying, well, that's a Vertigo comic. True, but DC owns Vertigo, so technically it is. Also mentioning you're talking about DC and Superman. Next season on CBS, not the CW, is Supergirl.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be coming out. That's going to be a television show. The point of all this, I'm sure we'll get the DVDs for all these series. They're really well-made shows, and when I go home after a long day at the library, it's nice to kick back and enjoy.
Well, I just wanted to add that on The Flash, my husband has watched every episode ever.
I have too.
I watched a couple with him, and I didn't want to like it because the guy that plays Barry Allen, I can't think of his name, he was a bad guy on Glee. Yeah. And I was already prejudiced against that. I didn't want to like it, but he overcame that. And I have to say, I've watched like 3 or 4 episodes. I don't know where they were in the season, but I did like it.
Well, that doesn't surprise me because there was a scene where they wrote in a karaoke scene, and
I didn't see that part.
Uh-huh. So I figured, okay, he must have a background in musical kind. He was on Glee.
But I want to play my "Don't Bring You Down" card or "Don't Bring Me Down" card.
Uh-oh.
Don't bring me down. The iZombie comics were horrible.
Yeah.
Well, they were so bad.
I'm reading those right now. I've just finished the first one. They are totally different.
The first one was good. Then it gets weird. Like, you get into Dead President Land. They just have all, like, the whole last comic.
Oh, super cool.
You would think so. But you'll have to read it. And, I mean, it was just like, here's a story, and here's a story, and here's a story. Like, they just kept jumping for storylines. Like,
So was it just like each issue was a story?
No, it was kind of one big arc, but it would be like, well, here, like, you would just get 4 different groups of people, and like they would just jump between them, and like you didn't know what the timeline was, and it was just like we don't have time to, you know, blend any of this. We're just gonna give it to you.
Huh.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's a common comic book thing or not, but
also the person who has book 2, would you please return it so I could watch it? I've got it on hold. If you're out there listening,
we see you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Patrons. You know, we work here. You know, we gotta wait for stuff too, just like you.
We share.
And the Daredevil show is on Netflix now too. And if you don't have Netflix, don't worry about it. The library will get DVDs as soon as they come out.
If you do have Netflix, just watch other stuff. Even though that's the reason you got Netflix.
Oh, I feel some domestic turmoil brewing. Yeah. So we'll get those Daredevil DVDs. I heard that show is really violent, but a lot of people like it. Now for something completely different, but still inside the DC universe.
Uh-oh.
The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. I had mentioned that this was tickling my fancy, and I said I was going to report back later. I can report back that it is excellent. It's more like a secret history of William Marston, who's the creator of the Wonder Woman character. So William Marston created the character Wonder Woman, but he also is a pioneer in the science or pseudoscience behind lie detectors. Jeremy has pointed this out, and some other critics have pointed out that none of these things are exactly secret, but perhaps what is unknown is that Marston was polyamorous, and he had a shared marriage with two women for his whole life, and they raised a family together. They all lived together in the same house, and if I was to pigeonhole the roles of the people in the house, there was Elizabeth Holloway Marston, who was the breadwinner. She was a writer, and she actually worked and earned money for the family. And then it was Olive Byrne, who was sort of the mother to all the children in the family and arguably the muse for Wonder Woman. And then there was William Marston himself, who was sort of this huckster who would pitch his ideas about comic books or lie detectors to the media and people that would publish him. And he published some serious psychology books throughout his career, too. And I think a lot of the personal history within the family is the stuff that Lepore had researched that didn't come out before, even though I think it was generally known that he had had a shared marriage. So one of the issues I kind of had with the book, even though overall I thought it was excellent, was that Lepore clearly doesn't like Marston at all and thinks that he's a hypocrite. You know, he claims to be a feminist, but he obviously likes to see women in chains. Literally, if you read the old Wonder Woman comics, he's really into that. And he also has, this biological essentialist ideas about the nature of women and the nature of men. You know, he thinks that women are one way and men are one way. But I guess the way I kind of viewed him in the book was, for the time, he was actually kind of an okay guy, especially if you consider the way that other men in the book treat his wives. Other men in the book are really horrible to his wives, especially after Marston dies and they want to keep the Wonder Woman legacy alive, and they're just totally mistreated.
Well, they made Wonder Woman the secretary of the Justice League when he, cut the teeth out of her.
Yeah, yeah. So, everything is relative for his time. Marston, I think, was progressive. So I don't know if the standard that Lepore is holding him to, I don't know if that's a legit standard. But, it's totally cool. He was a hypocrite in a lot of ways. The same sort of ambiguity also comes up in the matters of the lie detector, because in the press, Marston is kind of debunked as kind of a charlatan with his lie detector. But another gentleman basically takes the same technology, the same equipment, and patents it, and then sells it to law enforcement people all around the world, all around the country, then that becomes what we know as the lie detector.
Right.
So even though Marston was publicly shamed for an invention that supposedly didn't work, someone else basically just took his idea and patented it, and it became a lie detector. Now, the lie detector thing is still kind of up in the air because, they're not admissible in court, but for years the government used them to weed out bad seeds, even though there were ways that they could be beaten. And then, of course, it was interesting. I saw these weird parallels between how the lie detector is perceived in Wonder Woman. And then part of the book is about this, too. A lot of people see Wonder Woman as this feminist figure, and other people just see her as, another chick in a leotard.
Short pants.
Yeah, exactly. So what's this about, right? So besides just being about the history of Wonder Woman and this very non-traditional marriage when such things were really, really not tolerated in society, it is this nice, concise history of the early women's movement and also the early days of comic books. As an addendum, we were talking about superhero movies, and this person has come up before, but I think the person to make the Wonder Woman movie, the perfect Wonder Woman movie, would be Julie Taymor. why it would work so good is because she's always into mythology, and she adds these mythological elements to all of her movies, but Wonder Woman's actual origin story is mythological, so it would work, and it would be awesome.
But Julie would she make it a musical? And would she get Bono
lion-headed
involved?
People.
Would she make it a musical? Maybe.
50-50.
She might. I'm trying to think. Titus wasn't a musical, and that worked out, right?
And Frida.
Frida wasn't a musical.
Yeah, Frida,
that worked out. Well, the other thing, too, is she can handle women characters mm-hmm. better than some knucklehead would, which is why some of those other female superhero movies failed, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So Julie Taymor, Wonder Woman movie. I'm pitching it right now. Are you listening, Hollywood? I know you listen to the Popmatic podcast. And in the meantime, you can read The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Joe Lepore to get some history on the character.
That you're not going to get any credit for that when they do make it.
That's seems to be the theme of the day.
I
having
know,
a great idea,
yeah.
getting ripped off. All right.
That is 100% the history of comic books.
Maybe the library has it. Maybe it doesn't. But it's tickling our fancy this week, Bill.
Okay, tickling my fancy between June 5th and July 7th this year. At the Bell Court, you can see the films of Robert Altman, Nashville, MASH, Brewster McCloud, The Long Goodbye, California Split, Three Women, and I think Popeye, which was a...
Popeye's, yeah.
Is there showing
that?
Popeye?
Yeah, he directed that. That's going to be at the Bell Court?
Yeah,
yeah, okay, that one. So that keeps in line with the comics that we're talking about, based on E.C. Seeger's comics. And many more, and some of Mr. Altman's collaborators will be on hand. So go to www.bellcourt.org to find out more.
I'm so excited about this, more excited about this than I am about any stupid superhero movie. Snob card!
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Right. Wow!
But they're not showing Quintet. Shame on you, Belcourt.
Shame on you, Belcourt.
I want to see that movie. Tickling my fancy this week and other weeks is Michel Fife's Copra. This is a self-published comic book that is a riff on DC's Suicide Squad comic book series from the 1980s. Also, they're making a movie of it with Will Smith and Jared Leto. So there are other superhero shout-outs in this book, too. And it's very cool. It's currently on issue number 21. I've read the first three compendiums, which is like the first 12 issues, I think. No, excuse me, the first 9 issues of the series, if I go ahead and read my notes. I've been sitting on these for a while, waiting for the right time to read them, which is a stupid rationalization I have about hoarding things. So I read them, and I finally read them, and I loved them. I had bought the first one when it came out years ago and really liked it and then just was waiting to read the rest. I know that you can find some of the issues currently at Brain Freeze here in town, which is a couple of shelves located in the Groove record store on Gallatin Road, and they have lots of other cool stuff in there as well. But you can also order them from Michel Fife's website, and I will send Brian a link to include that. Also, Hoopla now has comic books. So I have no business reading digital comic books when I have a couple hundred unread paper comics in my bedroom at home, but I'm still probably going to check some out. Amanda?
We road tripped over the holiday weekend to see some family, and on our way back into town, we were coming in to I think we were on the north side of Tennessee, kind of by Ridgetop on 65 coming south.
Ridgetop.
And there was a bunch of swirly cable on the side of the road, and my husband was driving, and he's like, that looks like fiber optic cable. And so we spent the next 15 minutes. I spent the next 15 minutes listening to a diatribe about Google Fiber and how it's so awesome. And how we got a free T-shirt because he signed up for Google Fiber to come to Nashville. So, and I had heard about Google Fiber, and I think it's cool. So if you don't, basically what it is it's optic cable that you get a gigabit of media, and feel free to correct me if you guys know more about this than I do, because we're still in the things my husband likes category.
Really fast internet.
Yeah,
I thought
basically
that's what the shirts were made out of.
Oh, Google Fibers? It's like hemp, but yeah, more technological.
Exactly.
It's got Bluetooth.
Hey, I'm just walking down the street.
So basically, it's also more affordable because I either pay a $300 one-time installation fee or $25 a month for 12 months. So it is quite a bit more affordable than, say, Comcast.
But is it Comcastic?
No. So Google Fiber Nashville is one of their new markets. They're working on installing it now, apparently up in Ridgetop on the side of the road. But there were also Google has inclusion fellowships, and the Nashville Public Library actually got one of these. We have a fellow that works with Nashville Public Library to expand digital literacy initiatives.
Shake and bake. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Party
that Google monies.
The thing, too, if you want the 1 gigabyte per second, you will have to pay.
Yeah.
America has, like, some of the slowest internet in the world, right? Like,
for our level of tech.
Yeah. So apparently the internet's really fast in other parts of the world that are comparable to us.
I've had many discussions with my husband about Comcast and their lack of service providing. So. Yeah.
Well, now they have some competition.
Hey-o. So.
I like books.
Yeah.
Books? I read a book, you know, last week's show. I'm not going to read a book for a year or two.
Not two in a row.
But I do have a TV show that's kind of related to Google Fiber, kind of.
Nice.
Uh-oh.
See? I set you up.
Exactly. So I started watching a TV show called Silicon Valley. It's hilarious.
That's good.
So it's a half hour comedy show that was on HBO, I believe. And mm-hmm. what it's about is it's a team of sort of down and out developers that end up making this really useful app. And then there's a bidding war between the two tech giants in Silicon Valley as to who's going to get their app. It's really funny. These sort of down and out weirdo guys all of a sudden are the talk of the town, and they have to all of a sudden make these really big decisions about their lives and what to do with their money or lack thereof. It's quite hilarious. It's sort of, even though it's a half-hour show, it's kind of shot like a dramedy, and there's some really bitter satire. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, how we live now with technology, things that are good about it, things that are bad about it. This is just me, but since we started calling it Summer Challenge instead of Summer Reading, I always think of, like, projects I can do instead of, like, books I can read. And, like, for me, like, projects I can do are usually things with computers, trying to make my computers do things that they don't want to do, or hack them to do new stuff.
You're trying to take over the world, aren't you?
So just, well, this is what, I'll save it. But so just like for me, this show, Silicon Valley, which is really funny, actually fits really well with the theme of Summer Challenge, because all of a sudden these guys now go, oh, look, we made this great app. And then all of a sudden there's all these other issues that they didn't know that they even, you know, had to deal with. Martin Starr, who played Bill on Freaks and Geeks, is on it. He plays a Satanist computer security expert. So
if that
isn't, you know, that doesn't have you, just forget it. Don't watch the show. But if you heard that and you were like, yes, then yeah, check out Silicon Valley right now.
It was created by Mike Judge too, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mike Judge.
With Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill.
Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, Idiocracy.
Office Space.
Yeah. Good flick.
Yeah. You know, I can remember too, a while back, members of our web team, who are sort of the unseen piece of the Popmatic puzzle, they recommended me this British sitcom called The IT Crowd. Yeah. And though that was funny, and a lot of talented people on that show
have gone
on to do really great, funny stuff, that show was very much sort of in the sitcom mode. You know, it's like
laugh track
kind of thing. Yeah. It was really hard for me to get into, but I'm going to tell our web team, who I know listen to this, you guys should check out Silicon Valley if you haven't checked it out already. So since you guys hooked me, baited me, my summer challenge projects for me, other than just making as many Wikipedia edits as possible and counting them all as summer challenge points.
You probably have 4 million points.
I got that bag.
I have a Raspberry Pi that used to be a media center, and a Raspberry Pi is a cheap little computer that, you know, like a $30 computer that you can, you know, hack and do whatever you want to with. So I had it as a media center, you know, that I could control with my phone, you know. But since we moved apartments, it's just kind of not, I haven't hooked it up. So either I'm going to, like, redo it as my media center, or I'm going to turn it into a Tor node, where basically just means it's like one other piece that traffic on the Tor network can bounce off of. And there's like Tor nodes all over the world, and then that's how the Tor network works if you want to be anonymous on the internet. Like, I can help be part of that. So either make a Tor node or get my media center, like, revamped up and running again, and then maybe make a library box, which is a file server. What you do is you take a little wireless router, and then you hack it and you install some software. Then what it is it's this portable file server you can take wherever you want and just share files. It's been kind of pitched and marketed to libraries and written, coded by a librarian here in Tennessee named Jason Griffey, who actually just got a huge Knight Foundation grant to help with open hardware initiatives in libraries. So the idea is, say, for instance, if we go to the Wikipedia thing, I could have, like, files all about comic books, all about Wikipedia, right, in this file server, and it's totally open. All you got to do is come and then connect to that wireless network with your phone or your computer, and then you can download all that stuff. And, of course, the applications for libraries are really incredibly smart. You know, like, why not just, like, have those, say, for instance, at the PopMat desk, and you can come and, like, download books for free. Cool idea, library box. Shout out to you, Mr. Griffey. Maybe I'll make one. I have to actually buy the components. I already have the Raspberry Pi. I wonder which one I'm going to do. Summer challenge. Thanks, Lindsay, for making it happen. It's awesome.
I like to read.
You said you had a Raspberry Pi. I thought, oh, that sounds refreshing on a summer day. It wouldn't be a challenge for me to eat that. We'll be right back.
Corrections! Other than all the in-line corrections, so to speak, that I made, Mike made a joke that you only turn left in racing. But in IndyCar racing, you actually turn right, and the tracks aren't oval, and the tracks either go counterclockwise or clockwise, and so you turn every which way.
They should mix it up and, like, do half and half. So you...
And I was, like, you know, 90% sure of this when Mike was talking, but I'm not a big racing fan, so I didn't want to speak out of turn and be like... And we'd be like, oh, Brian, actually, you know, that's just the practice track or something. But it's funny because he was talking about a documentary about an IndyCar racer. There had to be some right turns in there. He's not here. I can pick on him. I think it's mostly in NASCAR that there are majority oval tracks counterclockwise, so you only turn left.
But I feel like I could be wrong about this, but I feel like the Speedway, Indianapolis Speedway, is an oval. Am I wrong? Did you research...
I believe that you are correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So there are just oval tracks in IndyCar, yeah, too, but there are also street tracks or road tracks. Sometimes you turn right when you race. This isn't really a correction. It's more of an addendum. Totally forgot that Talladega Nights is very much a parody of Days of Thunder. So I tried to correct this retroactively through a lot of Days of Thunder outtakes at the end of the last show.
Nice.
And if you listen in the trailers for both movies, there's that joke about finishing a race backwards. Only in Days of Thunder, they say it straight. The Tom Cruise character is like, yeah, where I come from, it doesn't matter which way you end the race or which end of your car hits the finish line first. And it's like, he's serious, right? And then, like,
wow.
And it was so great they actually do that in Talladega Nights.
Which I didn't know stock cars went backwards, but.
I don't know if they do.
But that's my problem with that movie, seriously.
This probably is an omission on our part. John C. Reilly was in Days of Thunder.
I didn't know that.
Totally forgot.
Yeah.
He's in the trailer.
It must be one of his first movies or something.
So. He was the fan. Hey, guys,
go racing. He's just in the background drinking a Mountain Dew.
Interesting. I've never seen the movie.
See, now you want to watch it now, don't
well,
you?
Well, what I realized, too, is if you took basically everything that we talked about, including the books that you talked about, and just put them in a blender, you would get Talladega Nights.
You really would. You really would.
Like you
there
could,
was sex on the table.
You could see like little pieces of all like the stories, you know, like the how they had made this movie. Anyway, that was last week's show. And one more thing about last week's show. This is a shout-out to Mike since he isn't here. Why am I giving Mike this special treatment?
I know. Yeah.
Love, not war.
If anyone else isn't here, I just ignore that on purpose. But Jeremy had made a passing reference to a Hunter S. Thompson quote. And the quote is, when
the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. The weird go pro.
Yes. When the going gets weird, the weird go pro. That helps whenever you're a journalist. I don't know if it's ever helped us on this podcast. But for more information...
Wait, I want to say something.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I just would like to continue our story and say that I was in Indiana on Sunday for the race, and I never even thought of it until 7:30 that night.
Wow.
I was like, oh, I wonder who won. And I think that the guy's name that won was Juan Pablo Montoya.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that he had a great time storming the castle.
Yeah, I killed his father.
So anyway, that was my story.
He had won before, but it was many years ago.
It was when he was a rookie, I think.
I won now again. One of my book club members was there at the race. Hmm. But for more information about storming castles, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And the theme music is by
Adam Bean.
Next week,
Bonnaroo
and CMA Fest on the same week.
Ow!
There's going to be a musical black hole in Nashville.
But a tax influx.
How much taxes are there on burrito stands?
People got to buy a lot of t-shirts, so they're going to lose all their clothes.
We'll be right back.
Okay, I have a completely unrelated question for Mr. Comic Book Man. What does Excelsior have to do with Stan Lee? Explain that to me. Everybody always says it, and I don't get. I mean, I get that it's Stan Lee, but
I think it's the motto of New York State. It's like state motto is Excelsior. Uh-huh. But like, so in the old comics, when he did do it all, in the sense like back in the '60s when like it first took off, he's worked for them since the 40s or whatever, but when things really exploded with Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and Hulk and X-Men and all the characters, he wrote pretty much everything. He edited it all, and then also wrote like all the in-house copies. So like, and one of the things that took off was like this like snappy dialogue that he would write in the it was called the Bullpen Bulletins page, and it was basically like a hype page. Like, here's what's coming out. Here's why you should buy this thing. And so, and he would write these things, and it was called Stan's Soapbox. And then for years and years after that, Stan's Soapbox would appear. And then other times, like he was like when he was not as involved with the company and stuff, it wasn't there. But then it came back. And so he would write a thing about like, isn't it great that we live in a world where James Cameron is going to make the Spider-Man movie, Excelsior! And like that was like his like sign-off.
That was his go-to.
So I would say like, hi heroes, this is your lovable oaf Stan Lee and whatever, and like lots of alliteration and like really silly like
bad writing.
Bad, purple, like as purple as your shirt
nice.
Writing. And then like that was his sign-off. It's like, face front, true believers, Excelsior!
He can say anything he wanted and just put Excelsior on the end and everyone, yay!
Yeah, and like in like the Mary Marvel Marching Society was like a thing that he came up with, like a fan club. And
so the answer was that Mr. Lee would sign off his editorials by saying Excelsior.
Yes.
Okay. I got it. Wanted to clarify that.
Sorry.
This is Stan Lee's front door. We were on Stan Lee's curb, then we were on Stan Lee's walk, and now we're at Stan Lee's front door.
Yep.
Oh, Lord, you just rang Stan Lee's doorbell. It's Stan Lee's house. We're about to go in and have milk and cookies with Stan Lee.
Okay, sweetie, I don't know if we're going to have cookies or he's just going to say hi or really what's going to happen, so just let me talk and...
Yeah.
Are you Stan Lee?
Oh, damn.
Hi, I'm Penny. This is my friend Sheldon.
We're not friends at the moment. Depends on how this goes.
Right. Anyway, Sheldon here is a huge fan of yours, and he was supposed to meet you the other day at the comic book store, but he kind of ended up in jail.
I see. And you thought you'd just come over to my house uninvited?
You said we were invited.
Well, no. I said I'm inviting you to come with me to Stan Lee's house.
You know, you fanboys are unbelievable. Do you think you can just ring my doorbell anytime you want? I mean, why don't you just come on in and watch the Lakers game with me?
Well, I'm not much of a sports fan, but thank you.
Sorry, he doesn't really understand sarcasm.
Well, I'll give him something he'll understand. Joni, call the police!